And now, from San Francisco and the UCSF Rosenman Institute, the Health Technology Podcast with your host, Christine Winoto.
Our guest today is Lucy Chien, a commercial executive who specializes in developing go-to-market strategy for startup technologies. Lucy recently left Subtle Medical as their chief commercial officer and is now a managing partner at Outlier Ventures, a consultancy that partners with health technology companies. In this episode, Lucy shares her insights from her time in international development, working within coffee farming in Rwanda, healthcare in India, and rural banking in China. What values and needs are universal to all people, and how do you understand each individual's cultural context in order to improve their lives? Here's our conversation. Welcome, Lucy. Thanks for joining me today. I'm so excited to hear to share your story with our listeners. And I thought it would be good for us to hear a bit about your background, how you've done quite a lot in such a short period of your time. How do you get to choose to be in a healthcare space and be an entrepreneur?
Yeah, thank you for having me today. Sure. I started my journey in management consulting right out of college. I wanted to build some business foundation strategy. So there I worked with Fortune 500s. I did have a focus on healthcare even at that time. So medical device, pharma companies, as well as we had a practice that was for private equity clients of ours who were acquiring different companies. I didn't necessarily go straight into healthcare right then, but I knew I wanted to do something that had an impact on the world. So I was actually went into international development right after that. So I spent some time in Rwanda working with coffee farmers. I spent some time in India in the healthcare space, thinking about how to lower the cost of healthcare for especially developing countries and populations. And then I went to China and worked on rural banking. So opening banks in rural China, funding small businesses and creating jobs. And then also kind of bridging the urban-rural divide that's been a big problem for China and its policies. So I was really all over. When I came back to the States to do my dual degree between the Kennedy School and Stanford Business School, I thought I was going to go abroad, go overseas, and do international development work. What attracted me to the technology field was obviously being at the Stanford Silicon Valley. And I think for me, that was not something I had been exposed to growing up. In fact, I tell people, my claim to fame is I'm user number 150 on Facebook, but clearly missed a boat and had no idea about the whole startup thing being on the East Coast. Now Harvard has a great program on entrepreneurship, but at the time, I was just really clueless, right? Most people from my graduating class that I knew went into consulting, went into banking. So that was the world that I knew. And growing up in Michigan, in the Midwest, the only entrepreneurs I knew were people who opened restaurants and laundromats. And so the fact that to learn about entrepreneurship, innovation, technology was really eye-opening to me. So I did my own startup actually in the ed tech space that was more B2C. But for the last 7 to 8 years, I got more into healthcare, partly because I saw the ability. Initially, I thought of technology as a separate industry, healthcare as a separate industry, et cetera. But as everyone now have clearly seen, technology really is transforming every industry. And so my husband has been in healthcare forever. So we had a great network of people, including some of my investors in my own startup. And so that was how I got initially brought into 10X Health. Because of my entrepreneurship experience and my technology experience, he wanted me to bring in that vigor, innovation, a new perspective to a medical device company. So even though it was a startup medical device company, I think it was led by more traditional med device folks. And so he wanted to help me, have me bridge that gap between healthcare and technology. And it's been, I guess that was really the turning point there for me to get into an operator role in the healthcare space. And then obviously my last company, Subtle Medical, is very much in the intersection of software as a service for medical device, using AI for medical imaging, and using all the latest tools there to solve healthcare problems.
Now, that's really interesting background that you have, especially your international in the not-for-profit sector. You touch on the banking in Africa, and then you were in India. So this is after your stint in a management consultant. You decide, like, I'm just going to leave that corporate world. I'm going to go to this developing countries.
Yeah, for me, I always knew that I wanted to build a foundation. So I did internships in investment banking, and I did management consulting for 3 years. I knew I wanted to build a foundation, the business knowledge and the know-how, but I always knew I wanted to apply it to either in the developing world or in ways to make people's lives better. Not that consultants don't do that, but just in a more direct way. I knew I wanted to be trained, and then with the training, take the training to apply it.
So what do you learn when you came out from Michigan and then go to Harvard and then go to the developing countries? What are the things that surprised you, and what are the things that you learned from that experience?
Yeah, several things. So, when I went to a developing country, I think you come or there's this perspective of we know how to do things better. And so here, let me show you how to do it. And one of the things I really learned being on the ground that has then taken a lesson that I've taken with me into entrepreneurship is really understanding your user, their pain points, their needs, to listen first, to understand the problem before you start to solve it. So, for example, in Rwanda, I was working with an organization called TechnoServe. We provided technical services to help coffee farmers so that they can form cooperatives. They got loans to create these coffee mills so that instead of selling their coffee to the commodity coffee that goes into Folgers, which is for pennies, they are able to actually use the rich volcanic soil that they have to grow really good coffee that was sold directly to Starbucks and Peet's. So this sounded like a great idea when we went in. But then when we went into the cooperatives, the farmers told us, oh, we just want you to give us free stuff. We want you to give us free seeds, free fertilizer, because that was the environment that they were used to. So I really had to go in depth and talk to the farmers. What do they need? What do they want? And also, how do you bridge the gap based on the culture that they came from? And, post-genocide, post-war Rwanda, there was a lot of nonprofit activity. So they were actually very used to getting handouts. But we really wanted to teach them how to build businesses that were sustainable, that then they can move forward into the future. So a lot of it was troubleshooting, just sitting in the villages, listening to the farmers and understanding the user. And while that might seem pretty far from a patient today that's going through an MRI exam or who's going to be treated for tendonitis, I believe that maniacal focus on who is your user, what is their problem, and understanding that first before you bring a solution that fits it has direct applications to all of the startups I've ever worked with.
You mentioned about the importance of listening, and obviously what you do by listening, you also try to help change behavior, and that is always very challenging. Give us people always say, listen, 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 right? But what does that mean? Because people always say, I thought I listened, but no, you don't listen. But what are the three tips that you can say, like, this is what it means when you listen?
Yeah, let me think about that and try to structure it. Yeah, when I think about sales calls that I'm on today, I think of also different stakeholders. So oftentimes when I'm on a sales call for a startup, I have somewhat of a solution for the stakeholder. But the first one is listening to what is the overall problem, right? Is the problem that you're trying to solve the one that they care the most about, that they stay up about? We often hear, is it a painkiller or a vitamin? So whether you're targeting consumers and trying to help them manage their health and change behavior, or you're selling directly to a hospital system that's bleeding a lot of money or could improve in efficiency, understanding what is on their plate and their priority list and where your solution stacks for that particular user. I think the second thing is understanding what is a complete solution. Often startups come in with a point solution. So For example, at Subtle Medical, we helped you make your MRI scans faster. And so that is a very specific capability and point solution. But what we realized as we started working with image centers and hospitals is that that whole entire workflow from getting the patient on the table to what the technologist is doing while the patient is on the table to the transferring of the images to the radiologist, all of that entire solution has to be seamless. Otherwise, your point solution, we might save 10 minutes on the scan, but if you lose 10 minutes somewhere else, it's pointless, right? So we actually, most startups start with a point solution, but very soon in talking to their customers is how they figure out the complete solution. I think the third thing as it really pertains to healthcare sales specifically is understanding the incentive of that particular person within the sales cycle. So for example, we sold to hospital executives. We had to convince radiologists. We had to convince the technologists who are working with the patients on a day-to-day basis. We had to care about the patients. And then we had to deal with IT. So for each of these stakeholders, what do they really care about and what makes them stay up at night? And how do you make their jobs easier? So for example, with IT, obviously they care about innovation and bringing it to the patients. But at the end of the day, they also care about the patient privacy, having that information not leak. And especially when we talk to health systems that had recent scares or hacks, that's the one thing that may slow down a solution or a technology from being adopted for 6 to 9 months at a time. So how do you understand each of your users, not just come in with one solution, and within that, make their lives easier collectively? And that kind of ties to point two with providing a complete solution, but it's a bit more nuanced of the individual user. How do you make that person's life easier with your solution?
And with that, that's when you have the opportunity to change somebody's behavior.
Yeah, either a health system's behavior or an individual's behavior. Yeah, how do you make that feedback loop? It's about kind of the benefit costs, right? Of the benefit of adopting the solution is you save some scan time. The cost is we have to change our workflow, we have to train new people, we have to change our scheduling, we may have to go through an IT process. So how do you make that equation so that the benefits far outweigh the cost? And do you understand the entire cost to the system? Because often entrepreneurs think about, well, here's the benefit that you get, but when they don't listen or understand what is a complete solution, the workflow, then that's where a lot of the bottlenecks and barriers come up in being adopted.
This podcast is sponsored by Brown Rudnick's Global Life Sciences Group, a team of legal professionals that help life science companies, lenders, and investors around the world turn good science into good business. Learn more at brownrudnick.com. This podcast is also sponsored by Canon Quality Group. Canon Quality Group has been helping med tech startups set up quality management systems for over 10 years. If you're unsure when to get started with quality management in your startup, turn to the experts at canonqualitygroup.com.
So your experience, you've been like in Rwanda and India and the US. I mean, people are different, yet they are similar. Do you notice that, or there's a core similarity in terms of what matters to people that you can apply to every different culture that you work with, and what are those?
Yeah, I think there's obviously core things, right? Caring for the health and wellness of your family, finding work that is meaningful to you. I think the difference is probably less cultural and more circumstantial. And so, for example, when I was working in Shanghai, right, I was this, idealistic person that came to help rural China. But a lot of my colleagues was just there for the job. And, I was wondering, why aren't you more passionate about the vision and the mission? And I think it's also understanding their shoes and what opportunities they have. I feel very fortunate to be born in, be in a state in the United States where I can decide to not go for a high paying corporate job, to do startups, to take risks, to have the financial and the family support and backing to do that. A lot of my colleagues in in Shanghai when I was working, they were under a lot of pressure, right? You know, they say like for a man to get married in Shanghai, you have to be able to purchase a house and be able to purchase a car in order for you to get married, right? And that's just part of the societal issues with China's one child policy and the gender imbalance. So those all play into people's motivations and in what happens, but it's understanding, you know, where people are coming from and also the privileges that I have to be able to make the choices that I do. And so, yeah, like, you know, for example, in India, one of the projects that the Acumen Fund worked on and funded was these chain of maternal hospitals, so that to get women out of their homes when they're giving childbirth, right? To actually go into a hospital, and how do you provide an environment that is comfortable? But again, it's about understanding what are the cultural beliefs, taboos, what are the fears, concerns, you know, whether it's economical or societal. And this goes back, I guess, to the whole listening to your customers point of, and it's understanding your colleagues, it's understanding people you work with, what are the backgrounds they come from? So instead of judging them for just wanting that high paying job or just wanting to get ahead, it's like, well, what are the conditions? What are their obligations? And what are the privileges that I have that I can make the choices that I do?
And how do you do that? Do you ask more questions to better understand them? I feel that's also a good way to try to understand the other person's point of view by asking a lot of questions about their experience.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is asking a lot of questions. Some of it is maybe people have biases or backgrounds that they don't even realize because everyone around them is the same. So this applies a lot when you know, I'm going into a new culture or I'm serving a new population of people. So whether that's, you know, people with chronic conditions here in the US, like diabetes, and there's certain habits or conditions or things that they're always used to. So some of it is talking to them and understanding that, and others is trying to step back and look at the culture and the context that they are a part of. Because they might not realize what they believe is steeped in the conditions that they're a part of.
So fast forward, you've kind of like, okay, I'm deciding that I've done a lot of this not-for-profit. Well, I'm just going to go to business school. Is that what happened? I mean, what made you think like, oh, you know, I think I want to, my next step would be going to business school and see what's next from there.
Yeah, I think business school for me was similar to when I decided to go into consulting first, right after undergrad, was the ability to build up the tools and the skill sets to so that I can apply that to a specific set of problems. So I did a dual degree between the Kennedy School, which had a really focus on international development, and Stanford Business School. And in particular, I picked Stanford because they had a social entrepreneurship program. I had heard about you know, really amazing startups that came out of there several years before I joined, like D-Light Design, which was prevalent in Africa at the time. They had a solar lantern to replace gas lights so that, you know, kids can study at night and not light their camps on fire. I heard about Embrace, which is a baby warmer for, you know, third world countries. So I was very drawn to the not just the entrepreneurship aspect, but also the social aspect of the Stanford program offering.
And that's when after you complete that study and then you join 10X. Is that right?
Yeah. So while I was at Stanford, I actually started my own startup in the ed tech space. So this was kind of in the early days of iPad apps for kids. So I wanted to create, interesting, useful apps for kids to actually engage with their faith. So that's a background and something about me that's really important to me, which is my faith. So I wanted to help kids in the next generation to be able to engage with their faith in interesting, interactive ways using technology. So I actually did that startup, which is called Four Soils, for about 2.5 years. And so I met one of my investors in Four Soils was the future CEO of 10X. And so he saw my work at Four Soils. He saw, the entrepreneurial lessons, how I led a team, how I was very lean, but also how I used a lot of the digital and technology tools to increase growth and user engagement. So one of the things I did at 10X is you know, there's several business models within healthcare. There's some that are B2C. You're selling a product to a consumer to help them sleep better or to, you know, exercise better. There's B2B, which is you know, what we did at Settle Medical. We sold software to hospitals to help them provide a better service for patients. And then there's B2B2C. So in 10X, it was a B2B2C where we sold this technology that treated tendonitis minimally invasively. But because tendonitis was such a prevalent chronic disease that a lot of people just live with for most of their life. So if you have tennis elbow or plantar fasciitis, even though it hurts you to open the doorknob or to run every day or walk every day, you kind of just lived with it because you didn't want to be cut open, have an open surgery, be out for 8 weeks, not be able to work just to deal with this pain. So 10X was revolutionary in that it was able to use an ultrasonic, minimally invasive device so you could get back to work really within you know, several days. And it's a very quick recovery process. But because so we sold this obviously to the providers and the physicians who performed this surgery, but because a lot of people didn't know the solution existed, they weren't seeking it. So a lot of the work I did in terms of marketing and strategy within 10X is how do you do the B2B2C? How do we help our providers get the information out so that people who are suffering from tendonitis can now seek out the solution now that they know exists?
And so you were in 10X for a couple of years doing a lot of their marketing and strategy. And how do you from there jump into Subtle as one of the co-founder?
Yeah. So I did a stint of, one thing I like to do, especially in jumping into early stage startups, is actually to work on projects or be able to work with them. So I'm in a similar phase again, since I just recently left StartX, since I just recently left Subtle, where I'm actually advising and consulting several different companies in a way to get to know the founders, get to know the market, get to know, you know, the customers, the pain points, and really understand it inside out. Because it's for a lot of problems or solutions, it seems great from the outside, but it's when you get into the details that you understand both the opportunities as well as the pitfalls. So between 10X and Subtle, I actually did about several months of both as an EIR, so entrepreneur in residence at SRI International. So again, one of my investors in my previous startup, Four Soils, invited me to come explore the technologies at SRI International. They're the ones that developed Siri. And also a lot of the robotic surgery stuff that you might know today. But they had a lot of great technology and he wanted me to help look at what are some of the commercialization options and ways to really commercialize and license out that technology. So I did a few months there to see, did I want to spin out something? Did I want to do my own startup? And then I also consulted and advised several different startups in the AI field in particular. So, you know, 4 years ago, AI was really blooming and up and coming at the time. So there were applications in, you know, construction. There was applications in, I worked with a company for earthquake management and emergency management. And then I worked with the team at Subtle Medical. So I met the two co-founders while they were still at Stanford and helped them do some market analysis, go to market entry. And when they raised the seed round and, you know, felt like there was a need for someone to come on full time, I joined full time at Subtle.
What draw you to the team from Subtle to join that you said, this is the team that I'm going to, you know, dedicate the next few years of my life full time to do the work with them?
Yeah, I think with any startups, there's two things I look for. One is obviously the problem, the solution. Do I believe there is a need for it. And then the second is, you know, the people that you work with, because these become, you know, you spend more people with the people, you spend more time with the people you work with than with your family, if you think about it, right? You know, if you take out the time that you're sleeping and, you know, not actually interacting with them. So really, those are two things I always look for with any startup that I work with. So in terms of the market, I got the chance to interview a lot of physicians, radiologists, also administrators. I saw that there was a big problem both here in the U.S. in terms of access, ability, patients' ability to withstand these long scans, and just a real opportunity to be able to impact that. But then also with the lens of internationally in the future growth, whether it's in China or India or other developing markets, really having that access to scans and making it easier, faster, cheaper, smarter, right? I saw those were both near-term as well as long-term opportunities. I think secondly, with AI and radiology being still relatively new at the time, you know, 3-4 years ago, I saw a more direct path to commercialization. So, you know, there's several companies in the diagnosis space, which is you show it a scan, they tell you it's cancer or it's not cancer. But I think especially 3 years back, there was still a bit of adoption curve in terms of the radiologist, one, believing that this is accurate. And secondly, fearing, so there were two reactions, right? One was, this is not accurate, we can do a better job. And then the other is, AI is going to replace our jobs. And so that's fight against it. And, you know, this is something we feared. But with the Subtle solution, I thought that they really looked into a part of the chain that wasn't threatening to anybody, but really benefiting the triple aim of healthcare. It made the patient experience better. It made the radiologist experience better because there was less motion, so they could get better images. And from a hospital perspective, they could pay for the innovation through scanning more patients a day. And so oftentimes within healthcare, there's a tension between those, right? It's great for the patients, but it costs a lot of money. Or, you know, you can make a lot of money, but, you know, there's some trade-off somewhere else. So it was rare to see a company that was met the triple aim of healthcare and also at a stage where it was more readily accepted. So I was really excited about the market and the technology. And then obviously the two co-founders are brilliant, and how he's a PhD. He's, Forbes 30 under 30. He's just really very smart. And then the other co-founder is a radiologist who's had a lot of experience, Greg. He's in radiology. And so he was in the field. He lived it day to day. He knew the pain points. And so I felt it was a great team to join as well.
No, that's good. It's you have such a breadth of experience from different industry, you know, for-profit, not-for-profit, different geography. I feel like you have such an exciting life that you can even, you know, write a book on different people that you met along the way. And looking back, it all makes sense when you look back, right? When you're first doing it, it's like, you know, it seems that moving in so many different directions. For all the experience that you have gathered, and then before you start your company, the EdTech company, and then join 10X, and then Subtle, and now it's your next adventure, what are the key things that, you know, make who you are today that help you to become more better listener, better attuned to what the customer needs and understanding and have that understanding and then be able to translate and execute the business into something that is adoptable and get to patient?
Yeah, I think maybe core fundamentally driving me is the desire to make an impact. And so whether I'm doing a job because I'm gathering the skills or I'm going to business school because I'm gathering the skills, there's always kind of the end goal of what is the impact that I'm making? And I think healthcare is a great space to be in because of that. I would say, you know, financially, healthcare is probably not the most, it has relatively longer sales cycles, slower adoption, right? But I think from an impact perspective, you can really impact the lives of a lot of patients directly. So, you know, a lot of work in healthcare is really exciting to me because of that. But, you know, even outside of healthcare, I've been just really impact driven in terms of what is my mark and legacy after the company, you know, aside from just making money, doing well, right? Like I want to also do good. So that's kind of the underlying thing for me. The second thing is, you know, I just have an insatiable desire to learn. I just get really excited whenever I'm learning about a new field, a new technology. And so I think the early stage startup phase is really a good fit for me. So I've taken, you know, it's been only a couple weeks since I've left Subtle, but I've been really excited to just learn about new technologies, to take a step back, to see what is happening in the healthcare field in general. Sometimes when you're working on a startup and your head's down, right, I know everything about radiology, medical imaging, like the back of my hand, but it's helpful to peek my head up to say, well, what are the latest trends, especially with COVID has changed the healthcare world so much, right? What are the latest trends? What are the new interesting technologies? Where is healthcare going? And the ability to be able to learn about that. So an insatiable desire to learn. I've been also, you know, getting into kind of mixed reality, AR, VR. What are all the technologies that could be impacting lives and how, you know, my thing is, how do you bring technologies and new capabilities into the market and change, you know, either patient lives or lives of other people? So I love learning about the technology aspect, but then what I do is then be the bridge to commercialize and launch that technology to everyday use and hopefully widespread use.
And it's also the work become more meaningful because the impact that you've made.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So no, this is great. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story and your experience. And it's been really a pleasure to have you on our podcast.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Great. Thanks, Lucy.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Health Technology Podcast. We want to thank our executive producer, Herminio Neto, our content writer, Kelly Muscat, and our podcast engineer, Andrew Rojek. If you enjoyed this podcast, be sure to subscribe and leave a review. The Health Technology Podcast is available on all major platforms.